Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
You're listening to Griefcast with me, Cariad Lloyd. Griefcast is a place to talk, share and laugh about the peculiar human process of death and grief. Each week, I talk to a different person about their experiences of grief and death as we remember someone that they have lost along the way, whether it was a long time ago or you've just joined the club. Welcome to Griefcast.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, Griefsters. I hope you're having an okay week. Thank you so much for your amazing comments on the first episode of our 8th season, which started last week. We're also very excited because this season we are part of Spotlight, which is a new program from Apple Podcasts that highlights one creator every month that they think you'll want to spend a lot of time with. So I am absolutely over the moon. I'm so excited that they picked Griefcast and its cheery grief chats to join them. It's now included as an official Spotlight pick. And if you have joined us because of the Spotlight program, hi, welcome. I call everyone Griefsters as a way of making it sound a little bit more cheery of what we're going through. If you have just joined the show, there are so many episodes you can go back and listen to. I will be sharing some favorites on Instagram and Twitter at the Griefcast if you want to have a look at them. And yeah, basically this is a place we come to talk about death and grief as honestly and bravely and truthfully as we can, surrounded by a community of people who understand how you feel. So if that's you, as I say at the end of every show, and maybe I'll start saying at the beginning, you are not alone. Thank you for joining me. This week, I'm talking to the incredible Fleur East. Fleur is an extremely talented person. She is a musician, a singer, a TV presenter, radio presenter. She has a new album that's out now, which you can buy from or stream if you head to her website. She came in to speak to me about her dad, who passed away very sadly at the start of lockdown last year in March 2020. Well, Fleur, thank you so much for coming to speak to me. So who are we remembering today?
We are remembering my father, Malcolm, today.
Malcolm. Was he Malcolm East?
Malcolm East.
Yeah, Malcolm East. So when did Malcolm die?
On the 15th of March, 2020.
Ooh.
Yeah, just before the first lockdown.
Yeah. And I'm saying ooh as well because regular listeners will know I would count you as fresh.
Yes.
Like that is a very fresh grief. Mm. That's very, very new. So was he ill for a long time? Did you know it was coming or?
No. For us, It was very sudden. I was coming back from doing Saturday Night Takeaway, actually. And I'd just spoken to my dad that day.
Wow.
In the middle of filming. And usually, weirdly, I wouldn't pick up my phone while I'm filming.
Yeah.
But I saw my dad call and I was like, yeah, let me pick up the phone. So I answered and we spoke for about half an hour and he was just asking about the filming and how I was and what my plans were for the week. And then I was in a car traveling back down to London and I was texting him and he'd just watched the show. And he was just saying, oh, I loved it and I've recorded it and I'm going to watch it again tomorrow because I think there's some things I missed. And I think it's great. And you've had such a long day, you're traveling back, you know, literally just a normal conversation. And then I remember sort of saying to him, okay, well, bonne nuit, papa. I just wrote it in French. And then I said, je t'aime at the end of it. And then he sent me the little unicorn emoji, like with the kiss.
Yeah.
And that was the last thing we ever said to each other. And then I got home and at 1 a.m. I got a phone call from his girlfriend saying, your dad's had a cardiac arrest. You need to come now. And literally that was it. And then he died that night.
Oh my God.
Completely out of nowhere. He was absolutely fine. We didn't have any health issues or anything really.
Oh my God, yeah. I've had other guests with, like, you know, cardiac arrest from nowhere, and it is such a shocking thing, especially as you said, like, when there's no health problems, there's no, that, like, inkling in the back of your mind, oh, they're not that they shouldn't be drinking or eating that because we know that problem. So that must have been just, yeah, you're just dealing with total shock. So did you get to see him? Or by the time you got to hospital, had he already died?
Well, he was actually at home. So I think it was about 1 a.m. when I got the phone call. And I rushed out of the house. I don't think I've ever left my house so fast. And I got to my father's house in under 10 minutes. And I just saw an ambulance outside. And I ran in and ran upstairs. And he was on his bedroom floor. And they were sort of like resuscitating him.
Oh God.
And there were about 4 paramedics around him, and his girlfriend was a complete mess. She was just bawling her eyes out. And then I just said to them, hi, I know you're doing what you're expected to do, but please just keep doing it. Whatever you're doing, please just keep doing it. None of them responded to me, weirdly. They sort of just looked at me and then carried on. It was really odd. And then I hugged his girlfriend, who was completely distraught. But in that moment, I wasn't upset. I wasn't largely panicked. I was sort of like, okay, I'm expecting to maybe go to the hospital tonight. This is going to be a long night.
Right.
You know, I was just like, you know, I'm just ready to kind of take him there and we'll deal with it then.
Mm.
And then I came down to the bottom of the stairs and there was another paramedic there. And she just looked at me with a really serious face. And she said, so we've been here quite a while. And I was like, right. And she said, we've been here for 45 minutes trying to resuscitate him. And I didn't understand what that meant. I was just like, okay. Yeah. And then she said, usually after 20 minutes, we would record that as a death. And so it still wasn't registering. And I just sort of said, what are you saying to me? And she said, well, even if we took him to the hospital now, there's nothing we can do. There's literally nothing more we can do. And I said, I don't understand. What are you trying to say to me? She said, unfortunately, there's nothing else we can do. And in that moment, I just broke down. I was just like, oh my goodness. I screamed the loudest I've ever screamed.
Mm.
And just cried. I just couldn't believe it.
Oh my God. That is such a lot to deal with.
Yeah.
That is such a lot to deal with. And also, a phone call in the night. Do you know what I mean? Like, you're already not quite with it and you're already, like you said, and I think it's so common with cardiac arrest situations where people, like you said, like, you're preparing for, okay, well, he's ill, we're going to get to hospital. And I think that's a narrative a lot of us have in our heads of, like, we'll get to hospital, doctors will do something. And to just have that door closed, to not even get to the hospital.
Yeah.
So did they just stop resuscitating him while you were still there?
Yeah, so they just stopped. I think, you know, now in hindsight, I realised that when I walked in and said, just keep doing what you're doing, and no one responded, it was because they knew that he'd died. They knew there was nothing more, but no one could really say anything to me.
Mm.
It was almost like they were just doing it, like to be declined or something, I don't know, or to show that they were trying. So then they took him off of all the... They had like loads of wires and stuff in the room and they took all of those away and then just sort of left us there with my dad. At that point, I called my sister, who was obviously asleep, and woke her up. And I was like, you need to come now. You need to come now. They're saying there's nothing they can do. You need to get here. And as soon as she arrived, she just ran up to the top of the stairs and saw me, and she saw my dad lying on the floor, and she just looked at me and she was like, what? And then I just shook my head, and then she literally just bawled her eyes out, and I was just holding her, and we were both just crying for ages. And then we went into the room. By that time I'd called my mum, who's very religious. She was praying so much. And then my mum arrived, but she stayed downstairs because I don't think she could really face it, to be honest. So then me and my sister were just upstairs sitting on the edge of my dad's bed, just looking at him, just laying there. And it was such a surreal thing because it just looked like he was asleep. It didn't make any sense.
Oh my God, especially when it's, you know, like someone hasn't been ill, you haven't been waiting in a hospital. Of course they look like they're asleep. Last, you know, they're not, their body isn't ravaged by illness or anything like that.
No.
So I guess, and it makes sense to me, but I can understand how it was confusing to you that the paramedics just left you, because obviously they've done what they can, but then you're just left with a dead person, that you, a dead father. Did you have to kind of, what did you do? Like, what was the next steps? I mean, you must have just been in total shock.
Yeah, I think there were long periods where we were literally just sitting there.
Yeah.
Just staring at him because we just couldn't come to terms with what happened. Mm. And I was almost in the back of my mind thinking, oh, they don't know what they're talking about. Like, he's going to wake up any minute now. He's going to wake up. That's what I was thinking. I just couldn't, get my brain around it. And then after a while, a few more family members came. So two of my aunties arrived. My husband was downstairs. He was distraught. It's funny how everyone reacts differently. But my initial reaction was I screamed and just started crying. My husband like grabbed something and just chucked it across the room because he was just so angry. He was like, no, this can't be happening. And everyone's sort of like going through this in their own way, all around the house. And then there was a moment where I kind of slowly started to realize that it had happened, but I wasn't ready to say goodbye to him. So there was sort of a moment where I sort of just laid on the floor, like next to him, because I was like, I can't leave. I just couldn't even fathom leaving and then him not being there.
Of course, because then it's real.
Yeah,
you know, so your it's really strange and weird what your body does and your body sort of makes decisions. And I think because we spend most of our life with our brain being sort of in control and brain telling you what to do, and I think when this a shock happens, your brain is just like, I'm out, like I'm not here. And so your body kind of goes, no, I need to be near him, I need to lie down, because I need to we need to somehow be where he is so we can go, he's dead, that's what's happening. And your brain is just like off somewhere else going, I can't, sorry, I'm going to go shopping. Like, I can't even take this in. And I think that's so, you know, I've spoken to a lot of people and that's so common, that just kind of this weird gear that you shift into and you just stay there. So of course you don't want to leave because it's real. And what was it, you know, a couple of hours ago you were in your bed asleep and it wasn't real. Like, it's too much for a brain to take, a shocking death like that. And it's really, really difficult. So I guess eventually you had to, you know, call coroners and
funeral directors. All of that's a bit of a blur. I don't really know who arranged that or who did that at the time, because I mean, I don't remember any of that, but I remember that the coroner arrived. And this man just walked up and saw us in the bedroom and said, we'll leave you for a few moments. We're downstairs, but we're going to have to take him. And there are some forms that you're going to have to fill out. But we'll leave you because we know that this is really difficult. So whenever you're ready, just come downstairs. And then I think my husband maybe gave them information and stuff while I was still up there. And me and my sister were just sort of looking at each other. And she was like, but I spoke to him yesterday and he was fine. And I said, I texted him a few hours ago. He was perfectly okay. And we were just sitting there. And then I said, because my auntie, I think, came up and said they need to take him at some point. And me and my sister just said, we don't want him to go. We don't want them to take him. And then by that point, my mother still hadn't been upstairs. And so we sort of said, well, Mum, you're going to have to come up because they're going to take him. Mm. She came up, and then I think that's when it hit me even more, because she just broke down. She just couldn't contain it. I've never seen my mum cry like that before. It was so sad. And I think that hit me even more because they hadn't been together for years. But she just grieved so hard. It was horrible.
I think it's very, in shocking circumstances, often you're a bit numb. And when someone else reacts, it allows you to go, oh, this is awful.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't, because again, your brain is sort of protecting you and kind of being like, they'll wake up. It's fine. It's not happening. And yeah, when you see a parent or an older family figure really grieving, like you said, it's like, I think it's helpful in a way, because it's all part of dealing with the shock, but it's very painful. It doesn't stop it being painful, but it does allow your brain to go, oh, it's real. This isn't a dream. Like, because so much of you just can't take it in. So yeah, of course, seeing your mum like that, it just highlights what is going on inside you that isn't ready to come out yet.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, Flair, that's just, it's such a, and also, so we're in the middle of, it's about to be lockdown.
Yes.
And I know this because I had my son just before lockdown, so I had my son in March,
right,
at the beginning of March.
Okay.
So I know that time period where it was like, oh, it seems like this is getting more serious. Like, people keep talking, you know, and everyone kept saying it was going to go away. So it's just before
literally, I think a few days before lockdown.
Yeah, yeah. And so they finally, I guess they finally took him, but
yeah.
Did you have to just come down and say, that must have been so hard to say. I think it's a funny question to ask you, come down when you're ready. I'm never going to be ready.
Yeah, like, well, exactly.
You're going to have to come and take him, because I can't go, you know what, it's fine now.
It felt like we were there for hours. Mm. It just felt like it was such a long process. I think someone had to come up at some point and say, okay, you know, we need to do this. So we came downstairs and I filled in the forms. And I always remember this because this is such an odd memory. And I guess people maybe react this way sometimes, like you use humor to just, I don't know, deflect, or I don't know, come to terms with it. And I had a show. I was booked to do a show the next day. And me and my husband had been doing some fittings for my outfit for the next day. And there were some things we had to alter in the morning. And as soon as I was filling out the information as next of kin, we were sitting at the table and I said, oh goodness, that show tomorrow, I'm not going to be able to do the show. And he was like, don't worry about it. Like, I'll deal with all of that. And I went, well, at least we don't have to do the alterations then. And I literally just burst out laughing. And he looked at me and went, what? He's like, how can you say that right now? And then he laughed. So we were both just sitting there laughing. And it was such an odd reaction, but it was almost like I didn't know what to say in that moment. I didn't know whether to laugh or cry, really.
It's so common. And we, again, this comes up all the time of like, you know, we made jokes after my dad died and we were in the room with him. Mm. He died of cancer. And so it wasn't, you know, it was very quick. It was eight weeks from diagnosis to death, but it wasn't, you know, a couple of hours.
Wow.
We talk about this so much of like, you're human. Like, we make jokes when things are sad or funny or angry. Like, you make jokes in arguments when you're screaming at each other. It's
that's true.
That is how we sort of process things. And I think especially in shock, it's so normal to make jokes around death, because part of you is still kind of going, it's not real. Mm. Like, sort of not happening. And my mum always said, if you don't laugh, you cry. You know, sometimes it's so awful to think, oh, I had this whole day planned and this joyous thing and that's gone. Mm. And your brain just goes, it's actually so awful. It's kind of funny, isn't it? And you're like, yeah, it's actually come right round to being the saddest thing that's ever happened to, we don't have to make alterations. Ugh, yeah, it's such a common way of dealing with stuff. And I think it's healthy, really, as well, because it kind of like gives you that moment to be like, oh, okay. Like, you also can't cry constantly.
No,
that's something I've learned.
That's one
you can't
thing,
literally
yeah,
cry for four. Yeah, you have to have breaks. Your brain is like,
yeah,
I need a break. So whatever we need, even if it's just like staring at something for 20 minutes or laughing. So you went home. What happened about the funeral? Because I guess right at the height of it all, with, you know, as we remember, there wasn't any, people weren't allowed to do anything. It wasn't like, you know, rule of six or anything. So how did you even get to have that ritual?
Well, that was a strange period, because then I had to learn about probate and to get the death certificate and all of these legal things that no one really talks to you about, really, because although we know it's inevitable for everyone, I guess you don't really have that conversation.
Yeah.
Unless you're super duper prepared for that, and or you're very realistic about things. And it was me and my uncle that were the executors of the will. So I then had to deal with that with my uncle. And it took us so long to get the certificate of death because of COVID. Oh, because around that time, a lot more people were dying.
Yeah, of course.
And so there was like a backlog, and it was just taking so long. And then it took a while to even get the autopsy as well. God. His body was kept for a while. I think maybe a week, or I can't remember how long. And then, so after that point, we were then told, you can have a funeral, but you can only have, I can't remember what the maximum was then, maybe like 8 people or something like that. It was really small, the number. And yeah, you can't really sit next to each other if you're not in the same household. You can't hug. You have to wear masks. All of it was really strange. So we did actually have the funeral, but it was only a few of us. And what was really difficult was my father's siblings were in Bournemouth, and his brother was the only sibling that was in London. So his two sisters couldn't come to the funeral because no one was allowed to travel then.
Yeah.
So we couldn't even do something remotely or have them back at the house or anything like that. So we had the funeral, and my uncle set up a camera to record the funeral so that my aunties could see it. So that was weird in itself, because who films a funeral? I mean, maybe some people do, but in a normal, typical circumstance, I guess we would have just had our family there and we wouldn't have recorded it.
Yeah.
But we felt that they had to be included. So we did that. And then we came out, spent some time together, put some flowers down. And then that was it. We couldn't really hug or cry or mourn how you usually would.
It's so hard. It's so, like, we've been saying this all this past year on the show, that grief is shit. Grief's really shit.
Yeah.
And to have to go through grief, which is already a shit thing, underneath these circumstances, is just, the phrase I heard, which I was really stuck with me, is trauma on top of trauma. It's like, it's already traumatic. And then to add, like, you can't just hug your aunt, you can't just hug, like, especially when you must have all just still been in complete shock.
Yes.
Like, just absolute shock. And that is when you really need touch. You really need people to, like, hug you and ground you and be like, you're here, you're real, it's okay, this is not, like, this is what's happening. So that must have been so difficult. And I guess as well, like, were you also kind of concerned about COVID? Like, it must have also been like, oh God, there's this thing, like, that could kill us all. We don't even know what. At March, none of us knew what the hell was going on. And then it was like, people were like bleaching their shopping. You know, it was like, who knows? So you're in shock and you're dealing with the shock of, oh, the world just shut down. Like, it must have been so difficult to deal with. What did you do?
Well, this was the thing. I think for me, I now will forever associate the pandemic and the world shutting down with the death of my father. And for me, it felt like the timing was actually kind of great in a way, because that sounds really weird, but it's just because everything had shut down. So I didn't have to go into work. I didn't have to face anyone. We didn't have to have a funeral with so many people there, because there would have been like well around 100 if we did it in a normal circumstance. Like, my dad would make friends with the postman. That was the kind of man he was. So everyone would have turned up, all our neighbors, friends, family. And I think actually not having to face everybody at that time helped a lot, because then it felt like everyone was mourning with me, because everyone had stopped to respect my dad. That's how it felt in my head.
Yeah, and that, I think we had another guest, Jess Robinson, who's a comedian, singer, and her father passed away, I think, just after the first lockdown. Mm. And she said a really similar thing. And we've talked about in the show, again, a lot, like, when you lose someone, not in a pandemic, mm. one of the hardest things is that you have, everyone else is normal. And there's this feeling that you're, like, looking out the window and you're like, how are they laughing? Like,
yes.
How are people going to the shops? And you get angry that the world is carrying on and you want everyone to stand still and be like, the worst fucking things just happened. And actually, the people I've spoken to, obviously, it's not... It wasn't fun. It was still awful. Yeah. But yeah, the idea that you didn't have to go to work, the world had stopped. It feels like everyone was in kind of the same headspace as you. Yeah. I mean, yes, you know, grief is shit. So if you can have any benefits, like, take them.
Yeah,
so
that was
anything
the one.
Positive? Yeah,
yeah, for me.
Yeah,
definitely.
And I mean, I guess, especially people who work in the performing industry, are normally extremely busy. Mm-hmm. Like, there's like gig after show. You know, there's your. I know from myself and my friends, the diary was insane.
Yes.
And it just stopped.
Yes.
So you would have been grieving having to go on stage, having to do television, and you just didn't have to do all those things. Yeah, there was another guest, Sam, who lost his wife last year. And he was saying, in one way, it was great because everyone was with him. But he said, in another way, it's been hard with it easing because suddenly it was like, now it's the world without my
precisely.
Wife.
Precisely. And I still haven't really got to experience that fully yet.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so while, you know, most people are like, this is great, we're going back to normal, Freedom Day, yeah, let's get back out there. And I'm almost like, oh, this is weird because now I'm going to have the first party without my dad, or, you know, just have life back to normal without my dad there. And I haven't experienced that yet.
Yeah, that's what he said about his wife, Kim, who, again, very sudden death, very, very healthy, completely fine. And she had a stroke. And he was saying it's like, everyone being excited about it, but him being like, oh, I've been in this bubble, this grief bubble, and I haven't had to go to Sainsbury's without her, like walk past that shop without her, like all these little firsts that when, and that's the thing when you lose someone, not in a pandemic, it's so awful and so painful, but it kind of forces you to get back into the world in a way that is hard, but also sometimes good because you kind of, you have to. So yeah, like, I guess it's, do you feel like it's delayed your grief slightly?
Slightly, but also has been like a form of therapy for me as well, because I haven't had to face anything too quickly.
Yeah,
and I've had to, I could do it in my own time and sort of pace myself. And I think that's made it easier. And, you know, our family got so much closer as a result of it and started a WhatsApp group instantly that we never had before.
Aww.
And just throwing jokes in there every day and checking up on each other all the time. And me and my sister have always been really close, but we were doing FaceTimes for like 6 hours because we couldn't see each other. So we got even closer. And I think just having that separation as well made it easier. I think if I was around all my family instantly and saw my father's sisters crying, and I think it just would have been overwhelming.
Yeah, it's such a strange time we've been living through, and the like consequences of it have been, I mean, I found it's like having a baby during this process of so much unexpected things. So much, like you said, like, I did not think that would be what would happen. But yeah, of course, I guess, because you can't be near each other, you can't take it for granted. You can't be like, oh yeah, well, we'll speak to them next week then, you know, we'll go around there when we're ready. You're like, no, I need to connect with them. And that feeling of connection is so important after grief. Like, you really, like, your loved, the ones that are in your inner circle suddenly become like,
so
precious. And you're like, where are you going? Be careful. Please don't cross.
Constantly. Like, constantly.
Yeah. And do you feel, because with other guests as well, when it's been shocking, like, do you feel like you're still managing the shock? Or do you feel like you've kind of, you're coming through it slightly, like you said, because you've had that time in lockdown?
I think it has helped. And I think I've always been the kind of person that talks about my feelings. I've always been that way. So if I ever came home from a long day and it'd been really stressful, my husband, bless him, would get like a whole hour of me breaking down why I was upset, what annoyed me, why, you know, that's staying with me, what I need to do to understand it more, to get over it. And then if he's bored of it, then I'll call my sister, mm-hmm. have another vent session with her. Then I'll call my mother. It's like, I'm that person. And then once I've done it, then I'm fine. So from the beginning, I was talking about my feelings quite a lot. I was never in denial about it. I didn't suppress anything. So I think that's helped me a lot. I think talking about it, and that's partly why I wanted to come on here today, because you feel like when you seem okay, everybody in your life thinks you're okay and that you're over it. So they carry on with their lives and they think they can joke about whatever in front of you and you're not going to be affected. Mm. And then you're sort of like, oh, okay, no, you guys have moved on. You've forgotten that I lost my father only, you know, a year ago. Okay, so I'm going to have to deal with this bit on my own. And so I felt like talking to you today would be part of my therapy again, because I haven't really spoken about it too much recently.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting for me when people come on the show, to me, you're so fresh. Like that, you're not even, you've just done a year. But people who aren't in the club, as we say on the show, would be like, oh, a year's quite a long time. But anyone in the grief world knows a year is, you know, I'm 20 plus. Like, wow. It's, you know, I'm fine most days, but it's not, it's never the thing we talk about all the time of like grief doesn't just disappear after a year. Like you learn to live with it, your life grows around it, you learn how to carry it a little bit better. But I think people really hang on to this idea that it goes away. And so they see you smiling and they see you maybe joking about something else. They think, oh, she's doing really well.
Yeah.
She's, that's really great. I'm so pleased for her. And you're like, I'm not done.
Like, yeah.
I didn't just forget my dad died. Like,
exactly.
It's still there.
Welcome back to Griefcast with Carrie Adloyd.
So have you found a kind of expectation that you should be, inverted commas, like fine now?
Well, no, but I think because, I don't know, it was weird timing for me, because as well as the lockdown, I just released an album.
Oh, wow.
Like literally a few days around the time my dad passed away. And there was like a social plan, and there was, you know, the release date, and everybody had to press go on Spotify and, you know, all these things. And I was like, I can't deal with that. And my husband just dealt with it all for me. And he was like, you don't stress. You know that your father was so excited about this album coming out. You have to put it out. You know, you've just got to do this. This is your one true love. And you know your dad would have wanted this. And I agreed with that, but I couldn't really face it. So then whilst I'm sort of locked away and grieving, my socials are popping. There's like music every day. My album's out. People are streaming it. I haven't even like spoken really at this point. It's just all my promo stuff is out.
Yeah.
So people were sort of seeing that. And only the people that were close to me knew that my dad had passed away. I hadn't even announced it on social media at that point. I remember actually someone close to me contacted me in that time and sort of said, hey, do you think you could do this thing? And sort of just like as everything was back to normal. And I replied like a couple of days later and said, just so you know, I'm still kind of like going through things. Like, I hope you can understand that this is really tough and blah, blah. And they sort of came back and went, no, of course. I saw that you were on social. So I just assumed that you were dealing with things okay. And I was kind of like, I don't even know how to explain this to you, but I just kind of went, no, that's fine. Of course, like social media is what everyone looks at now, don't they? And they just assume that that's your mood. But I felt like I had a duty to just continue with that obligation and put my music out, because I do know that my dad would want that. And then finally, when I plucked up the courage, I then did put a post out on Instagram. And it wasn't like I felt like I had to do that, but it's almost as though it was part of it and part of me realizing that it actually had happened. I felt like the moment I put it out there to my fans, everybody who followed me and everyone who knew I'd spoken about my father a lot on my socials, that then, okay, this is it. It's happened. And it's out there.
It's funny, isn't it? The social media thing. Mm. Yeah, I can see, especially at that crazy time. Like, what were any of us doing at that point? It was insanity, those weeks in March and April. And then, yeah, for someone to look at your profile and be like, oh, she's fine. You know, she released her album. Like, Yeah, I have. Things can be pre-recorded. That's how it works. But yeah, I can see that pressing share or post or whatever it is on Instagram is a part of that journey for you, because yeah, it's making it real. Mm. And I guess I'm sure, well, I don't know if you tell me, I don't want to assume that was a large part of moving through that shock of something becoming real. Because yeah, sudden shocking tragic events like that are just, from my experience of talking to people, the first 6 weeks are just shock for like a normal inverted commas death, you know, like someone dying in their old age. And then when it's something like that, it's your body, your brain, like everything is trying to process, like it happened.
Yeah.
And I really had that, like with my dad. I said it was very quick from diagnosis to death, and I think I spent years in shock, like absolute years. Obviously I was like much younger. Yeah. And I think also with shock, it's a bit tricksy, because like I think every time you think I'm not shocked anymore, like a year later you're like, I was shocked. Mm. I was still in shock. But you kind of, it's like a very slow unfreezing, isn't it? So like every inch is important. Every inch is like, oh, okay, now I'm a little bit, I can take in that. I can see that. I always describe it as like, you know, it's like a bomb blast, and you just keep walking slightly further away from it and looking back and being like, oh, that happened. But you have to keep looking and you have to keep talking about it. She said that's so important. Did you seek therapy, or did you feel like, you are someone who talks anyway, so I'm relating as somebody who talks a lot. My husband has to deal with my 1 hour performances.
Yeah, performances. That's exactly what they are.
Let me tell you why I'm annoyed, why they were wrong, and why I was right. In three easy stages.
And then attack it from several different angles.
Yeah,
that's me. I think me and my sister were quite sensible, I guess, in a way, when it came to this. So we both said, we need to go to therapy. And I think it was my sister that found an app. It was a therapy app on her phone. Wow. Because obviously it was lockdown, so we couldn't even go to see a therapist if we wanted to. So she found an app and then she sent it to me. And she was a lot more ahead in the process, I guess, when it came to that. So she'd already been to a session. And then I sort of waited for her to give me the feedback.
Yeah.
And then I was like, okay, I think I'm ready to do this. And by that time, it was only a few weeks, maybe a month since my dad had passed away. And I was like, right, I'm ready to go to therapy. I think I'm dealing with this okay. I've got this. I got into the therapy session, and literally all she said to me was, so tell me what's happening with you. And the minute she said that, I just broke down, and I was crying all over again. And it was like it was fresh. It was almost like it just happened that day.
Yeah.
And I couldn't even, it was like that uncontrollable crying, like, and I was literally like this. And I thought, what? I thought I was well ahead of this. And then it all just came back again. And I felt like I was back to square one again. And then I had a couple more sessions with this woman. And it was amazing, actually, just talking to someone who didn't know my dad, and someone that wasn't family, and someone that wasn't gonna cry when I cried. It was actually really helpful, really, really helpful.
I mean, it's funny though, isn't it? Like the pressure of timeline that we put on ourselves, like 4 weeks after a sudden death, of course you're still crying. Like, of course. And, you know, I remember being the same of like, oh, 6 months, you know, probably ready to move on now. Mm. And like, it's just, grief doesn't go away. I've said this before, like it waits.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more.
and is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
It's very patiently for you. Mm. And I used to be really scared of that. I used to be so scared, like this monster in the room. And then it's taken a lot of therapy to be like, it's not malevolent. It's just this thing that needs to be dealt with. And I think we're so quick to be like, well, how can I deal with this as quickly as possible that I'm going to feel fine and I'm going to go back to before this, like, I want to get back there. And it's, you know, you're not. No. And so, yeah, of course, 4 weeks after a phone call in the night, seeing him lying on the floor, like, that is so much to unpack. That's proper, like, PTSD territory, you know? And I think it's amazing that you were dealing with that early. I think that's really good to make sure you're talking about it, because I think for some people it's just so frightening. They just shut down completely. And thank God, that's the thing again. I know we've all said this so much, like, those lockdowns were so awful, but thank God for technology. Thank God that there was an app that that you could find that person in the mist. So did you do a few sessions? Did you carry on, or did you reach a point where you were like, I just need to break from this? Because it's that first year is really difficult.
Yeah, it's hard. I did like 3 or 4 sessions, and I think in the last session we were just clearing out my dad's house, because that was a whole other situation we had to go through, where it was selling his house, our childhood home, clearing out the house, going through all his belongings, looking at all his pictures, packing his clothes, all these things. It's like the night that he passed away, me and my sister both took things from his house to keep with us. My sister took, I think, a jacket of his, and I took a hat of his, and I was just like holding his hat that night. And then when we were emptying his house, I found like these favorite combat trousers that he had. They were like dungaree, like pilot trousers.
Yeah.
And he was always so precious about them and never wanted me to like wear them, or where are you gonna wear them, bring them back, like, you know. And that was the first thing that I wanted. And I just grabbed them, and I think I wore them for like maybe 2 weeks. I was just wearing them all the time because they still smelled like him. And so I was holding on to them. And when I was talking through all the memories in my therapy session, I was smiling. And it was the first time that I was smiling and I wasn't sad. And she sort of said to me, she was like, oh, look at you, look at you. Like, what an amazing man your dad was. What a character. You have so many memories. You've had such a great life with him. And it was really positive at that time. So then after that, I didn't really have another session again, because I felt like I feel good about talking about my father now. I feel like I've come over a really difficult period. I've come through that now.
I just think it's really good that you have sessions sometimes just to get you through that period, like you said, like that initial shock, just to have someone hold your hand through that kind of, oh my God, they just died. And I think, therapy kind of, it's the amazing thing about therapy is it can come and go when you need
exactly.
it.
Exactly, yeah.
But yeah, if you have happy memories, and, you know, some people don't, they don't have great relationships with their dad, and it sounds like you were obviously very close to him and very in touch with him and all of that stuff, like, from what I've read, like, that is very helpful to the grieving process. Oh God, yeah, because, you know, that is grief, is you start looking back at your relationship and what it was, and actually who were they and what did they mean to you. And if you can find like bits of gold in that, as well as the, like, obviously, you know, everyone's a flawed human being, and be like, oh yeah, that was weird, wasn't it? That maybe wasn't okay. But that's so important, to sort of putting your heart back together, you know, of being like, okay, there's this goodness, and then there's that, and there's obviously the trauma of how he died. That's really sad, but what we had was really important. Like, all of those things sort of help you, you know, put yourself back together as best you can so early on. How did you find the first anniversary? Because obviously you've just, you know, just a few months been through that.
Yeah, that was strange. Because like I say, I think everyone had moved on. Well, that's what it felt like. And you almost, like, you get offended that people are moving on with their lives. And you just think, how can you not remember that it's been a year since my dad passed away? Or how dare you laugh on this day? And things that you just get these feelings. And I had to have a word with myself a few times and just go, look, you know, you've got to understand they're not in your shoes.
Yeah.
You know, they won't understand unless they've been through it. They won't understand. Because I felt that everybody who'd lost a parent that I knew would constantly check in on me.
Yeah.
Because they just knew exactly what it was like. So it was like every 2 days, how are you feeling today? It's going to get easier. You know, it's like...
Thinking of you, you'll be all right. Send you brownies, like
exactly.
Yeah.
And I felt like I was part of this club. It was really strange. It was like, oh, there are people out there like me. I'm not on my own. And then me and my sister and my mom decided to meet up that day, and we went to visit the place where we used to always cycle with my dad in Epping Forest. And we there was this bench made out of a tree. It was cut out of a tree. We used to always sit there on our little breaks. So me and my sister went there with my mum and just visited it and just sat there and just had a little moment and just spoke about my dad and remembered all the good times we had with him and had a little drink. We had a little cider and just sort of like cheers to him. And it was actually a nice day because at that point, we'd not that we were over it, but we'd spoken so much about my dad in that first year that it was, we wanted to just be positive on that day and just celebrate him. And so that's what we did. And so it was quite a joyous day, actually.
It sounds lovely. Like, I think if you can do something that, if you can do something that feels connected to the people who are still here and connected to them and peaceful and calm and loving, like that's, because I get asked a lot on our Twitter, like, oh, what should I, how can I do, how do we do the first anniversary? And I always say, like, either do something you enjoy or something they would have enjoyed. Like, those are like, you know, if everything they enjoyed is like your worst nightmare, if you don't want to watch like 5 hours of Formula One, that's fine. Do something you want to do, and then they would be happy that you are happy. But yeah, I think that's really important. And I can relate in that way, because this year has been so hard for everybody. So with grief, I think you do constantly feel like, God, my God, literally no one fucking cares. Like, they haven't, like...
I know.
Are you joking me? What are you asking me? But this year has been increased because, like, everyone's had so much stuff on their plate.
Oh, yeah.
And I had that, you know, having... It was my second child, but the amount of people who just, like, literally... Oh, yeah, you had that kid, didn't you? Anyway, yeah, so I think, wow.
Not even gonna... excuse me, that was a pretty big deal.
Yeah, it's quite, I know I've already got one, but it was quite a big deal. But I could see from my friends' faces, like, they were so, like, yeah, everyone's plate was so full
this year. Exactly, yeah, that's true.
And it's, yeah, I had two friends who lost parents this past year, and obviously someone in the club, I've been like, how are you, what's happening to, and then saying to other people, by the way, like, it's only 6 months since like happened, or this is a year.
Yes.
And other people being like, oh, is it? Being like, yeah, it is. And I always say to people who ask like how I can help, it's like, put an iCal reminder. Like, just note the date, iCal reminder a year later, so-and-so's like dad's anniversary. Jot them a text on the day. Like, stuff like that means so much.
Yeah,
and you're just like, wow, they remembered. Because it does feel like people don't. And it's not malicious. It's just thinking because they're, you know, their plates are just so full, especially this past year. And God, you know, people have been under so much pressure for so many different reasons. So you do, I think as the anniversaries go on, you get sort of, like, obviously, I'm not that bothered if anyone doesn't remember 20 plus years. I'm like, it's all right, guys, it's fine. But I do, you know, I think your close circle, you know, becomes really, really important to you.
Yes, extremely.
Yeah. And I guess it's one of the weird, again, like one of these weird benefits that you really do. Do you feel like that you are appreciating things on a different level?
Oh, yeah. I feel like I'm a completely different person. Completely different person. I mean, I've always...
Really?
One of the things that I kind of thought about was I've always been a happy person. Like, I've always had a cheery disposition, as I say, because people always kind of meet me, or whenever I've been interviewed, they sort of ask, how are you so positive? How do you stay so... Like, is this an act? Is this just who you are? And I was worried that after my dad passed away that I would lose that. I was like, I'm going to be scarred. I'm now going to be bitter. I'm going to be a miserable person. That's what I thought, because I was like, I've faced like a really deep trauma. And now I'm going to be, I'm not going to be able to smile anymore. That's just what I thought. But then while I was talking about it, I think that's why I went to therapy. Me and my sister agreed that we didn't want to change as people. We didn't want to become hardened to the world because of what had happened. And then as soon as I spoke about it a lot more, I then got my mojo back, I guess, and my spark came back. And I realized that actually I can still live on and be the same person. And if anything, I'm now doing everything for my dad. It's completely changed me. And I appreciate my loved ones a lot more. I'm more understanding of people because I know that I've been through things and I've had to show up to work. I've had to do this, do that. And no one knows what I've been going through. And so I always now consider that a lot more when people are going through something. If they lash out one day or they're a bit moody one day, I always just think, I don't know what they're going through. So I just, you know, I understand them a lot more.
Yeah, I think that's, it's funny, isn't it? Yeah, because I think that's a lot. People have this fear of death, you know, that it will, you'll just wear black forever and you'll be miserable, you know, that'll be it. And actually what it does is, how can I describe it? Like, it's not that you're like sad all the time. It's just that you can see the sadness and you can see the happiness. Just becomes like you get a bigger picture and everything's much clearer. So although you are more sensitive to sadness or you're more aware of it or other people's unhappiness, it doesn't mean you are like, oh my God, life's awful. You know, you're just like, yeah, life sometimes is very hard. So I can be empathetic with that person because I know what it's like for life to be that hard, rather than, I think, yeah, they're constant. And you know, I've met people who are like super upbeat and really happy all the time. And I think there's a place for that. That's great.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, definitely, it's nice. You don't want everyone to have lost their dad at 15 or lose their dad in a pandemic. Like, it's great. Some people should be walking around like, yeah, nothing bad has happened yet. And you're like, you know what? I'm so good. And I always feel like, yeah, that's really good that, you know, you get this plethora of experiences because, you know, we were all, it's helpful with some people to be like, you know what? I think it'll be fine. You need those people sometimes to be like, I think everything's going to turn out great. And you're like, I don't think that because of my learned experience, but I'm glad that you do because that's, you know, one of us might be right. So yeah, I think it's important that that's, and obviously you still seem really positive. Has it just because you are a musician, like has it affected your music and your creativity in a way that you didn't expect? Like, do you find it's coming out that way?
Well, yeah. What was interesting was that in the first lockdown, I was pouring out so much music.
Mm.
It was like I was writing nearly every day. I was just writing songs, writing raps, posting raps online. I recorded an NHS charity single. I was just doing so many things because I felt like, I don't know, maybe it was an outlet for me. I just felt like I needed to do something else to just not wallow in the sadness, I guess. And I think because music was such a thing that bonded me and my father, so I felt like a sense of comfort writing and singing and doing things like that. So I think music has helped me a lot as well, actually, and listening to all my dad's old records and putting on music that he loved makes me feel connected to him. And yeah, it's been amazing for me.
That's, my dad was really into music. He was a DJ back in his day. Like, you know, not a, like a disco, proper disco jockey. And do you, like, how do you cope? Because I have this, like, love-hate situation. I've got better, but, like, the songs that are, like, songs that you bonded over, of, like, that, like, I don't want to listen to it. Like, do you just push on through and press play?
Like, yeah, because I just, like, for example, if I'm out somewhere as well, there's also this thing you go through where you look for signs, isn't there? Like, if I'm out somewhere and Bob Marley's playing or Van Morrison, Brown Eyed Girl is playing, which is one of his favourite songs, then I think, Dad's here. Like, I can think, I take that as like, I can think about Dad now in this moment. Or this is a nice reminder of him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I've got through the sadness. I think because it got us through the grieving as well. I think any chance I had, I was playing music that reminded me of Dad. Me and Kesha, my sister, were doing it constantly. So it's really helped me.
It's good. It's good if you can, yeah, turn to it and it can be a support. Are you particularly religious at all? Like, have you?
So my mum is a devout Christian and I was raised Catholic. So I went to church every Sunday, went to Catholic school. I'd say, obviously, I'm not as devout as my mom, but I do have a strong faith And I do pray, and I do believe that someone is watching over me, and that if I pray, I can find strength in that. And I think that has helped me get through as well. I've prayed a lot. I've prayed with my mom a lot. I've prayed with my sister a lot. And that has definitely helped. My dad was an atheist. He didn't believe in any religion whatsoever. But it's helped me, and it's been my guidance through it all, I think. And just coming to terms with the fact that everyone's going to experience this. Because I think you know that, yes, one day everyone's going to die. And you sort of say it flippantly. Oh, yeah, one day we're all going to die. And then as soon as you lose someone, you're like, oh, no, we really are all going to die. Like, this happens. Like, one minute the person is alive and talking, and the next minute it's just literally a body. Like, they're not even there anymore. And then you realise how important, like, your soul and spirit is. Because seeing my dad lay there, I was like, that's not even my father. I don't even know who that is. And even with his house, I remember leaving his house, and me and my sister were standing there and going, this isn't even Dad's house anymore. His spirit isn't here. His soul isn't here. His vibrant personality isn't here anymore. And then you just realize you're kind of walking around in this like vessel. It's really odd, but you almost have that feeling as well, don't you? You're like, none of this actually is really important on the outside.
Yeah, I think, and you don't get that until you've seen a dead body. I think really, not obviously, until you've lost someone very close to you, not, you don't have to see the body. But I think that definitely affected me, because I saw my dad's body, and I was like, oh, a shell. That's a shell of a person. Yes. Like, that's not a thing. He's not there. And it's your brain is like, oh, I see. Like, what makes it. Someone?
Yeah.
And whatever you want to call it, you know, soul or personality or spirit, like whatever it means to you. I was like, oh, he's not in there. Like, he's definitely not in there. That is just like a bag of muscles and like flesh. And it was so weird to be like, right. And I know so many people who say, oh, we're all going to die. You don't say that when you've lost someone. You say, we're all going to die one day. Like, it's still, you're like,
it's happening.
It matters. Whereas when someone, I remember, like, I was at uni with someone who used to really like enjoy her sunbeds. She's a lovely girl. And she would say, oh, I'll get skin cancer one day and die. Never mind, I'll be old. And I remember just sitting there thinking, but you don't know what cancer looks like, and you don't know what someone looks like when they're dying, and you don't. And I remember just thinking, wow, you can say that so easily. Like, when people go, oh, well, I'll just drop dead and it'll be fine. You're like, you don't know what that means, because you haven't seen it. And you're good. I'm glad they don't know. I'm glad.
Well, exactly. But, you don't want anyone to know that.
No. Yeah. But when you do, like you said, it's such a different thing. And yeah, I think, God, if you can have faith through these processes, it definitely helps. Why not? Yeah,
that's what grounds me. I think that's what keeps me positive and keeps me smiling, actually. Having that faith, that's probably what does anchor me.
What do you think? I know you're asking, my husband's a militant atheist. What do you think your dad would have said? Do you think he would have just smiled and laughed about it, like, whatever works for you?
Do you know what I did? I actually made a joke about it, and I thought, because he was super paranoid about COVID. Right. My dad was always worried about things. He was such an anxious person. If anything was happening, he'd be worried. If I was going to an audition, he'd be worrying about it all day. He was just that person. So we got to the point where we had to hide things from him until they were done, because he would just panic constantly. And when the coronavirus hit, I mean, that was it. That was all he was focused on. He was watching the news every day. He was reading every day. He was sending texts every day. He was paranoid about this virus. And it's almost like I don't know. I can't diagnose what happened to my father, really. I mean, he had clogged arteries, and that's what caused the cardiac arrest. But in my mind, I think he stressed so much and put so much pressure on his body that ultimately that was what kind of did it. And he was just so paranoid about it all. And I made a joke that he would be like sitting somewhere going, oh, thank God I don't have to worry about that anymore. Good luck, guys. Good luck with that one. Lockdown 1, 2, 3. Yeah, good luck. I always just think he's looking down, just laughing at the whole situation. Like, he's had a lucky escape almost.
Yeah. That's really funny. It's, but I'm a real worrier. So yeah, I can completely understand you. If someone was like, we're done, you'd be like, oh my God, I don't have to worry about anything.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, great.
See you later, guys.
See you later. Good luck, though. Fingers crossed. I hope you are all right. I know you have to stay in for so long. I'm so sorry. God, yeah, that's funny, isn't it? I think it's interesting what you said about, the stressing and stuff, isn't it? Like, my dad worked really, really hard. He was a complete workaholic. And you can't, you know, obviously I'm not a doctor, I don't know, but you can't help but try and, I guess, make a narrative and think back on things and be like, I guess that didn't help, did it? Like,
no.
That he, yeah, this thing that he didn't relent on and didn't really change probably didn't help his physical health in some way. And I think I find a bit of comfort from that because it kind of gives it a bit of sense rather than like this thing just happened out of nowhere. It kind of makes you go, okay. And it's not to say, obviously, if you work very hard, you're not going to necessarily die from cancer. That's not how it works.
No.
But when it's your narrative and your parent, you need to find a path to, especially when it's sudden like that. Well, Fleur, thank you so much for speaking about him. It was so lovely to talk to you. And I really appreciate it, especially as I would say you are very early on with your grief. And I know that people do appreciate people sharing that story because, you know, it's hard. The beginning is hard. Like, it's a really rough, raw journey. So the fact that you are here and are still smiling and still talking about it, I think will be really helpful for people.
Yeah, I think that's why I wanted to do it, because I think the minute you hear someone else share their experience, you immediately feel a sense of comfort and you go, okay, I'm not on my own. I'm not the first person to go through this. I won't be the last. And actually, there is a better day, you know, because at the time it happens, you think that it's all going to be doom and gloom. Like I said, I felt like I was going to lose all sense of myself. I was going to be this bitter person. And actually, I've just learned to appreciate life a lot more and not to take anything for granted and live life to the fullest. It's allowed me to live life even more because I've experienced loss and I've seen how quickly it can go. So if anything, I'm more positive in that sense because I'm like, yeah, let's go here, let's do that. Like, I don't overthink things anymore.
Oh, well, that's damn good advice. Fleur, thank you so much for coming to talk to me about your dad. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You can follow Fleur on Twitter and Instagram at Fleur East. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at The Griefcast. That's at The Griefcast. The show was edited by Kate Holland. It was recorded remotely from my living room and I think at Fleur's radio job. The music was provided by The Glue Ensemble. And remember, wherever you are listening, firstly, thank you so much. If you are new and you were brave enough to try a conversation today, I know it's not always easy to dive into these podcasts. And as I say at the end of every show, you are not alone.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.